This is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files. Podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
The United Kingdom's Ministry of Defense released in August 2009 its second batch of 800 UFO documents in 4,000 pages. The MOD's first UFO files were released in 2008, and the third batch is expected next year in 2010. The MOD says it has now released all of its December 1980 RAF Bentwaters UFO files, along with a summary to the media generally reported this way, quote, "The UK's Ministry of Defense could offer no definitive explanation for what the U.S. Air Force officers have reported seeing, but also found no evidence of any threat to the defense of the United Kingdom. Nothing had registered on radar, and there was no evidence of anything having intruded into UK airspace and landed near RAF Bentwaters in Woodbridge." And yet, only 2 months before, on June 25, 2009, Colonel Charles Hault, the deputy base commander at RAF Bentwaters in December 1980, during all the UFO phenomenon, spoke on the record in a press release, quote, "I wish to make it perfectly clear that the UFOs that I saw were structured machines moving under intelligent control and operating beyond the realm of anything I have ever seen before or since. I believe the objects that I saw at close quarter were extraterrestrial in origin, and that the security services of both the United States and England were and have been complicit in trying to subvert the significance of what occurred at Rendlesham by use of well-practiced methods of disinformation," close quote. Not long after Colonel Hault and the UK Ministry of Defense made these public releases, which appear to be contradictory, the second volume of an important trilogy by historian Richard M. Dolan, entitled UFOs and the National Security State, was also released that includes a section about the December 1980 RAF Bentwaters UFO phenomenon that reinforces Colonel Hault's conclusion that the incident was extraterrestrial in origin. Richard Dolan took 10 years to produce the first two volumes of UFOs and the National Security State. The third volume is expected in late 2010. The energy behind his decade-long work was first provoked by his astonishment about so much hidden history described in the book Above Top Secret, The Worldwide UFO Cover-Up, copyrighted 1994 by Timothy Good. Richard Dolan said he began to sneak books about UFOs into his college history and political classes at the University of Rochester. Richard told me, quote, "I got to the point where I would be going into the university and hiding my UFO books almost like a guy would hide a man's magazine to the university. He laughed. I would not want anyone to see I had a UFO book." Richard Dolan was born July 1, 1962, in Brooklyn, New York. He grew up in Brentwood, Long Island, where he graduated from high school in 1980. 4 years later, he had earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in history and English literature with a minor in philosophy from Alfred University in Western New York after spending a portion of his junior year in 1983 studying political ideologies at Exeter College in Oxford University, England. 10 years after that, Richard Dolan had earned two Masters of Arts degrees in history in 1986 and American History and U.S. Diplomacy in 1995 from the University of Rochester. So how did the budding historian switch from serious war history to one of the most politically controversial subjects on Earth, the unidentified flying objects? He got into an argument with one of his professors about the merits of a book entitled Case Closed by Gerald Posner about the 1963 President Kennedy assassination. Rich Dolan gave reasons why the book did not add up and why the truth about the assassination appeared to be covered up. When the professor accused Rich Dolan of being a conspiracy theorist, Rich realized that even academics were not objective, The professors towed certain political party lines in order to have research grants and to get tenure. Suddenly, Rich Dolan knew he did not want to be trapped in superimposed paradigms, and that what he most wanted to understand and research was the long, complex, controversial history of the global UFO phenomena. Richard Dolan self-published this new second volume to maintain control on the content, and his important book can be ordered directly from his website, www.keyholepublishing.com. Think of looking through a keyhole. So again, his website is www.keyholepublishing.com. Since the second volume has come out around the same time as Colonel Holt's extraterrestrial statement about RAF Bentwaters and the MOD release of more UFO files that do not contain really sensitive and highly classified RAF Bentwaters documents and photographs, I ask Richard Dolan why the MOD would try to window dress a superficial release of UFO files as complete when they are not.
The MOD, going back to the 1970s and 80s, has always obfuscated, not clarified, the issue of UFOs and its relationship to it. And let me add something else here about Charles Holt and the whole issue of defense significance regarding the Rendlesham case of 1980. In my new book, Volume 2 of UFOs and the National Security State, I've got a fairly long piece on the Rendlesham case. And this is an account that I received from fellow researcher Peter Robbins, who, with Larry Warren, wrote a book on Rendlesham. And Peter and Larry interviewed Charles Holt in about 15 years ago, in 1993. And according to Peter Robbins, Holt admitted to them at that time privately that the beams of light from the UFO that night somehow penetrated the alternating layers of steel, earth, and concrete of the hardened bunkers, which had nuclear weapons there at the time. Ultimately, Holt told them the beams reached the secured areas where the weapons were stored, quote, adversely affecting the ordnance.
And this completely contradicts any assertion by the MOD now that there would be, quote unquote, no evidence of anything having intruded into UK airspace and landed near RAF Woodbridge?
Clearly. You know, back at that time, Lord Hill Norton was involved. This is one of the top military legends of Britain, calling for a better investigation of the Rendlesham case. And what he had said is, if this is of no defense significance, I mean, it's one or the other. Either something unknown landed in a secure area where it wasn't supposed to go, some unknown object, or, conversely, the U.S. military personnel who were there were under some kind of psychological delusion that would be so serious that it would have to be of defense significance. So, you know, his argument was it's either one or the other, and there's no way that that cannot be of defense significance. Obviously, no one believes to this day that this was some kind of psychological hallucination.
And not psychotronic weaponry, as some people have been trying to argue. And I would like right now, since this goes right to the heart of everything in your book and basically to the heart of Bentwaters, I would like to read briefly from the June 25th, 2009 press release by Gary Heseltine, the scriptwriter, in collaboration with retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt. And this is Colonel Holt's own words, quote, I wish to make it perfectly clear that the UFOs that I saw were structured machines moving under intelligent control and operating beyond the realm of anything I have ever seen before or since. I believe the objects that I saw at close quarter were extraterrestrial in origin, and that the security services of both the United States and England were and have been complicit in trying to subvert the significance of what occurred at Rendlesham by use of well-practiced methods of disinformation, close quote.
Yeah, that's a very, very strong statement indeed. Trying to understand the structure of power and the structure of secrecy itself, this is always a difficult thing to do because none of us researchers are in on the decision-making process to clamp down on this. But what has happened is, over 60 years, we've had this massively important phenomenon that a number of people have known about and decided this is too important to share with the rest of the world. One obvious reason, it seems to me, is that they're hiding not simply the reality of another intelligence here on this planet, but actually the possession of certain hardware that they obtain somehow in their possession, whether through crash retrievals or some version of hand-me-downs. But they got some technology that was so exotic that they realized they could not possibly want to share this with the rest of the world at this time. In circa 1950, there was a Cold War going on. There were concerns within the United States over Soviet espionage, stealing atomic secrets, and so forth. If the United States did not want to share atomic technology, clearly we must assume the United States would not want to share something as exotic as alien technology. So what would they do? Well, I think what logically they would do is gather together a team of top individuals to decide how the technology gets passed off to private industry for research. Another person decides how bad the public panic might be. Another person might be in charge of understanding who these other beings are, and so forth. And I think this is exactly what happened. It may not have been a decision by Harry Truman that this secrecy would last forever. It could very well have been a case where he might think, we'll revisit this in a few years and decide at that time what our strategy will be. But the problem with a secret like this is that it develops its own momentum, its own profitability. It becomes, in a sense, a goose that lays golden eggs because you've got this technology that eventually certain genius scientists are going to study these materials long enough. They may not be able to replicate it exactly, but they may get some very nice ideas indeed. Improvements on integrated circuits or development of laser technology or high tensile fibers or what have you. And so their incentive then becomes nil for wanting to give this secret up. They have no incentive. Forgetting the topic of UFOs for a moment, let's just look at the structure of power in the world in general. And what we can see is a kind of silent transformation of the structure of power in which privately dominated groups have gotten their hooks into public structures, public institutions. And this is exactly what has happened within the UFO topic. This secret has gone private. It's not so much classified any longer, I think, as it is proprietary. And that makes the secrecy even more profound. You know, individuals who work in the government come out of private finance and private industry, and they go back to that world when they're done. It's a revolving door. So, for example, if I, as a 4-star general, were to work with you, a major defense contractor, and we share this technology, and your corporation holds on to this technology, when I retire, I get hired as a senior vice president, and I make a lot of money, and we've got all these great ground floor investment opportunities. So that's how the world of non-UFOs and the world of UFOs works. That secrecy has twisted and transformed our world in such a profound way. Keeping the secret has involved a tremendous amount of money. For example, let us assume that there is a research and development program in place to study this technology. Well, clearly it has to be hidden from Congress. It's got to be hidden from every form of legal structure that we have here so that it can maintain its secrecy. And indeed, I was told by one very well-placed source that the cost of physical security in all of its aspects, the cost of securing the secret, was 7 to 8 times the amount of the cost of actual scientific research and development.
What would you speculate is the fundamental reason for why there seems now to be sort of this perpetuation of a policy of denial about something so fundamental as we're not alone in this universe and there are other intelligences interacting with our planet?
My own opinion is that there are many layers and levels of why this secret is so profoundly important to them. But one practical one, I think, is that, just as you say, it's such a fundamental truth. By revealing this truth, the United States President, Barack Obama, were to say that UFOs are real and apparently alien. This is not something where he can just make his statement and then go away. There is going to be massive follow-up and investigation of that reality. one of the obvious questions that's going to come up, no matter how brain dead and comatose the U.S. media as a rule has been, there's going to be something that's unavoidable. And that unavoidable question is, how the hell did the U.S. media miss this for 60 years? And how did the U.S. and global academic communities miss this for 60 years? And investigating those questions, that's only the tip of the iceberg. But that gets into an incomplete array of illegality and manipulation of what is supposed to be institutions that answer to the people. So that's one thing right off the bat. In other words, the truth is so fundamental that the lie has had to be just as fundamental to deal with it. Now, there may be something even more profound behind this. We do, after all, have the presence of other intelligences that are here. Who are these other beings? Are they here to help us? Are they here to hinder us? Is it a bunch of factions that are out there? Are we, in fact, in the midst of a silent Cold War and don't even know about it? There could be a lot of things that, if the public were to know, might be seen as destabilizing, at least in terms of the stability of the current political structure, and that's always something that's important.
But if destabilization is always the argument on the part of authorities and governments, then doesn't it mean that those in authority are always going to be perpetuating a policy of denial into the future as far as they can go because they don't want to deal with the consequences?
Yes, absolutely.
Once you see that, then you say, we are on a planet that is living a perpetual lie.
I think one other reason why this is such an important secret for them to keep has to do with short-term, by short-term, I'm guessing 20, 30 years, economic repercussions. So, for instance, let us assume that the UFO secret comes out somehow. All right, so now we're going to be asking, well, what's the power plant of these flying saucers? They're obviously using something really nifty, better than our petroleum. So whatever it is, whether it's energy from the vacuum or some other source that's phenomenally impressive, that will do things to the current petroleum industry. Then there's the electronics industry and steel industry. You can go on and on here. Now, you can easily argue that in the long term, properly handled, these new technologies would be a revolutionary benefit to mankind and the world. You could certainly make that case, but in the short term, 10, 20, 30 years, they would portend to be very economically destabilizing. Who knows what would come out on the other end of all of this? In other words, I think what it would bring, some kind of disclosure or openness on this, it would bring a great deal of uncertainty. And I'm sure that those individuals who've got their grip around the tail of this tiger, they know that if they let go, there's a lot of unpredictability up ahead, and I don't think they want that. They want control.
What do you think it would take to leverage open the truth about non-human intelligences interacting with the planet, no matter what the consequences, letting the chips fall where they may?
Well, I believe that there's a paradox here. Releasing the UFO secret is both impossible and also inevitable. It's really both. It's impossible in the sense that there's no motivation for those secret holders to give it up. No motivation that I can see. However, the fact is that we are living in the most revolutionary period in all of human history. There's nothing that comes close to the period of time that we are in right now. We are on a tightrope. If we get to the other side of this tightrope, we're going to be in for the wildest ride. We're in the midst of such technological innovation and change and transformation. We're going to be having intelligent computers common, probably in less than another generation. We are in the process of probably reinventing who we are biologically. We've cracked the human genetic code. We are on the verge of reinventing ourselves. It's a significant, major event. And so what I believe is that at the end of this process, in another 20, 30 years at the most, our society is going to look so completely different than it does now. Think about what we've gone through in the last 20 years, where we go from basically no internet to a world of absolute total connectivity. in which, you know, in your hand you could carry a little piece of machinery that could contain entire libraries worth of data, entire musical libraries, video archives, and online streaming and everything else in your little hand. And so we've gone from, in a century, we've gone from horses pulling carts to the world that we have now. So we're not going to stop. And clearly, in such an unstable, revolutionary, transformative period, I am convinced that something is going to happen. And I don't know what the trigger will be, but something is going to happen that's going to force this issue open.
Rich, why do you think that there has not been straightforward, non-human, putting themselves down in all of the countries in both hemispheres, very straightforwardly, let's say, in the last 200 or 300 years?
Well, this is a great question, and unfortunately, all I can do is speculate based on the history of sightings and encounters that I know about. One thing that I know is that there is a long history of confrontation between our military, that is the U.S. military, as well as militaries of other nations, of confrontation between those militaries and these UFOs. In other words, there are attempted jet interceptions. There are occasionally cases where jets have fired missiles at these objects. We know this happened. We have the documents to prove it. So there's been trouble in paradise, so to speak. That's one issue right there. So does that mean, like, who are the good guys here? It's hard to say. Are they the good guys or are they the bad guys? But there is some form of confrontation going on. This is something that any kind of true disclosure of UFOs must confront, is why do our militaries seem to be fighting them? I don't know the answer to that. It certainly could be that they are observing us. It seems to me that we're at a point in our history in which we must be intensely interesting to them. By them, I mean any intelligence, any group that has the ability to come to look at Earth right now. Our species has been probably in their world all along, but we've been asleep. But now, we're at a point in our history where we are about to leap into their world. We're about to wake up. And so they must know this. I cannot see any scenario in which they don't know this. So my feeling is there's going to be an announcement. There's going to be some kind of event, something within, I would predict, 20 years from now. I have friends and colleagues in this field who think it's going to be much sooner than that. But I think 20 years is a reasonable guess. Why they haven't done it up till now, the only thing that I can point to is perhaps the possibility of excessive social disruption or the fear of social disruption by those human groups. Why the ET groups or the alien groups don't do this, this is something I don't know.
And Rich, how is it possible that over at least 60 years since World War II, that media institutions such as the New York Times and the Washington Post have been so successfully blocked by the U.S. government from seriously doing any investigation?
To get what you want, you control the media. Since World War II, we also know for a fact that the New York Times, Washington Post, CBS, Time Life, the major media of the United States have had a close working relationship with the United States Central Intelligence Agency. We know this. There's been some very excellent journalistic work that has laid it out. We also know that the same type of relationship exists with the CIA and American academia. There have been some very good academic studies detailing the relationship of the CIA with, for example, Yale University. It was one very excellent case study on that. But there are others. You don't get to be that news anchor unless you have learned through years of hard experience what is appropriate and what is not appropriate for you to say and to think. As George Orwell said, the best kind of censorship is the censorship that you do to yourself that you don't even know about.
And that explains all of the sarcastic laughter on TV news that should be investigating, not laughing.
I had a very, very candid discussion a couple of years ago with a news producer at NBC. I said, look, NBC could be doing so much more. And he looked at me and said, look, I know. He said, but we are owned by General Electric, Rich. And when he said that, he shrugged his shoulders. He said, we're owned by GE. What else can I do? I mean, he knew the score. He understood that his corporation was not a truly independent corporation, and that the corporate mentality which permeates American news, there are many journalists out there who work within that large structure who really do want to do true investigations, but they can't. They're not able to because the system that they work for prevents them from doing that.
So when do you think that the United States of America ceased being a constitutional republic as we thought we lived in?
Well, I think it happened, it's the way you cut a salami, slice by slice by slice. So when does it stop being a piece of salami and you just got these little pieces? I don't know. It went by degrees. You could say it happened a century ago when the Federal Reserve Bank inserted its way into the structure of power of this country. But what really happened was that the National Security Act of 1947 created an institutional structure that reinvented the American government formally and finally. It gave the CIA carte blanche to do things that any normal American would have said, what? We can't be like that. And yet, this has been our history for the past six decades.
I would like to return to a paragraph from your book, and it was your sentence by 1990. It looked as though at least some UFOs were operated by entities not of our human civilization. I am curious, after 10 years of working on these two large and important volumes, what has convinced you the most that we are dealing with entities not of our human civilization?
You go all the way back to the 1940s and 1950s, and we're dealing with reports of technology that is as inexplicable today as it was back then. Objects that, according to reports that we have, of objects that did zigzags in the sky near military bases.
And 90-degree angles.
Exactly, in the 1940s, that could stop in midair and then take off with instant acceleration. Now, I'd like to know what can do that. And guess what? So did American intelligence analysts. They wanted to know. They looked into this matter in the 1940s and 50s and 60s and 70s, and they never stopped looking at it. And periodically, things would leak out. Reports would come out. We know that reports came out in the 1940s that said, this appears to be an interplanetary phenomenon. That was the word that they used back then. And in the 1950s, the issue came to a head, and with many, many analysts we know concluding that this was an extraterrestrial phenomenon, and so on through the years. My feeling is that this cannot be explainable as simply deep black technology, because if it is, then I need to know, we all would need to know, why are our jets chasing them for 60 years? All right, it's one thing to say, well, we're testing your defenses, okay? I mean, you might hypothesize that. But for 60 years? Let's get real here. You know, there is evidence that the phenomenon involves non-human entities because we've got an enormous mass of witness testimony who said, I was taken by beings that were not human.
Right.
Got a lot of that, okay? There's at least something there to delve into, and researchers have done this. So to just say, oh, it's classified technology, this is absurd. There's so much more going on here. And the data leads, in my view, to an extraterrestrial phenomenon. There's one UFO case, it's a famous one, that has never left my consciousness as possibly the most significant UFO case that we have. And it's not the Rendlesham case, although I think that that's right up there. The case that I'm thinking of would be the 1976 Iranian jet fighter incident.
Mm-hmm.
The case that took place over and near the city of Tehran. This was back in the days of the Shah, when Iran was an ally of the United States. And the reason I feel that this is such a critically important case, and that I think any skeptical person who looks into this case is going to really think twice. The reason is that the case itself is utterly spectacular, in that we have U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency documents describing in detail two F-4 fighter interceptors in a row, scrambled by the Iranian Air Force, sent in to investigate an object that the whole city of Tehran was looking at, this bright object displaying all kinds of bizarre lights coming out of it. In each case, that phenomenon disabled the electronic systems of the F-4 fighter jets as they approach at a range of 25 nautical miles. In one case, the pilot was literally on the verge of pressing a button to fire a missile at the object when his missile system went offline. Now, it's also important because of the level of the testimony after the fact. One of those pilots, who later became a general, spoke at length about that experience. And we have further confirmation of this case through data from what are known as the DSP satellite system. That is the Defense Support Program, DSP. This is a U.S. military program that has a series of geosynchronous satellites in place, one of which detected a UFO over the city of Tehran at exactly the time and date of the incident. So, in other words, we have a separate confirmation. This is something that I've included in my book. And then you've got an event that we have to explain. What object in 1976 can disable the electronic systems of what were then some of the top-of-the-line best fighter jets in the world? F-4s were outstanding in their day. That could do that. Was that a Soviet technology? Can anyone honestly say that the Soviet Union was playing games over Tehran airspace at that time? No one seriously entertains this idea. So if not them, then whom? This is a question that any responsible historian, any responsible military historian, has to look at, and they have ignored it for, 33 years. This case has been ignored by conventional mainstream historians and analysts.
Because our government and other governments with inside knowledge did not want media or researchers to pay important attention to a case that would prove non-human intelligence over Tehran.
Absolutely. This is technology that, no matter how you look at it, is revolutionary. What can do such a thing in 1976? That's an incredible event.
In this new global structure of power, lies, policies of denial, are what support the structure. How long can this go? How long could this planet sustain such a huge global lie when there are all these other forces of truth that are pushing against the power structure of lies?
That is the $64,000 question. How long can it go? And the thing that I ask myself frequently is one outcome inevitable over another? So is it inevitable that that global structure will impose a global totalitarian system? Or is it inevitable that the forces of freedom will prevail? I don't really know if we have the answer to that. My feeling is that this is a struggle that is not over. It's not done. We can see that the lines have been drawn. There is a major push to create a global police state. It's underway. Anyone who's not seeing it is not looking. But there is also, it's not hard to see the other side either. There are many millions of people who see the truth, and they are speaking out and they're fighting. So where this will end up, I don't know. I think the other factor that's going to play into this is our ever-evolving technological revolution that's going on right now. You know, people in Tehran, we just heard all about how Twitter was transforming the nature of the Iranian government's handling of the recent election there and all the riots that were going on.
And isn't it hugely ironic that the computer technology in its speed of evolution since the 1940s onward is probably tied directly to the retrieval of extraterrestrial technology out of extraterrestrial craft, as described by Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso?
My feeling is that the possession of alien technology gave us quite a bit of a boost. If and when something goes down, if and when, let's say, a U.S. president makes a statement, we've got to remember that this is not necessarily a full or even truthful disclosure. We have to remember this.
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.